Welcome back to Open Line. I'm Charlene Brown. A couple that's planning to get married should be able to discuss any aspect of their coming life together, from where to live and how to raise children to who does the dishes and walks the dog. But one topic that's often overlooked in the prenuptial preparation is how in-laws will affect the dynamics of the couple. My guest is psychologist Dr. Terry Apter. She's written a number of books on family and relationships, including The Confident Child, Raising Children to Believe in Themselves, and another book called The Sister Knot. Now she's written a new book with some wise advice on what creates so much tension in in-law relationships and how to get along better. Terry, thank you so much for joining us on Open Line.
Well, it's a pleasure.
Have you found that most couples have trouble with the in-law relationships?
Well, more than 60% of couples say that the in-law relationship has some difficulties, that there are aspects of it that disappoint them, that they find much more difficult to deal with than they had anticipated, and that they would really like an improvement. And many couples say that in-law relationships, the problems therein, cause long-term stress and unhappiness and can even affect the happiness or the longevity of their marriage.
Is this information that you've gathered from people who are about to be married, from the newly married, from people who have been married a long time? What group are we talking about?
The group we're talking about are people who have been married between 2 and 25 years.
Ooh, that's quite a range
of
experience.
That's quite a range. But the issues that are linked to in-law problems are very, very basic. They're issues about, how close am I to the person who's very important to me, whether that person, is a son or a husband, a daughter or a wife, from both the perspective of both generations. The question is, how much direct influence do I have with this person? Am I able to protect this person? Do I still have value and status in the family, or is it threatened by an in-law who, in a way is an outsider in the family? Maybe this outsider is welcomed as a newcomer and seen to extend the family and add to it, and certainly very important to the continuation, the reproduction of the family. But still, it raises questions about, how is this newcomer going to affect my status in the family and my influence with the people I love?
Why is that so disturbing or distressing to so many who are entering into these new family relationships?
Partly because it's unexpected. The younger couple think that they're forming a brand new family of their own, that they'll be able to regulate how things are. They'll be able to communicate directly one to the other about what they want. What they find instead is that there's all this outside interference. Some of interference is also connection. We benefit from being connected to other generations throughout our lives, but those connections also bring problems. So I think that I'm going to be able to negotiate with my husband where we're going to live, how important my career is versus how important his career is, when we're going to have children, how we're going to raise these children. But I find, and this is just an example, I find that his mother has views about how much say she's going to have in how important his career is versus how important my career is, how we raise our children, what counts as a happy, healthy child. And all of these things are unexpected, and we don't have any rules for dealing with these questions and these problems as they arise.
Is that in part because of the way, for example, here in the United States,
yeah,
our society has evolved with more women working outside of the home, with more people moving away from home, not staying with the family?
Well, what is so interesting is that these problems are much broader culturally than I anticipated they would be when I started doing the research. Now, I expected that the women who are becoming mothers-in-law today would have much more, there would be much less of a generation gap between daughters-in-law today and mothers-in-law today. And women who are becoming mothers-in-law said, I feel I have much more in common with my daughter-in-law than I had in common with my mother-in-law. I, too, went out into the world. I, too, had a career. I know what it's like juggling family and a job. And so I'm a modern woman just like my daughter-in-law is. However, when it comes to her son, her concern is primarily for his well-being. And it may be that she, the mother, thinks that, you know, her son would be much better off if his wife put his career first, if his wife stayed at home with her grandchildren and looked after them. That may be the easiest. That may be the way that she sees the well-being of her son and her grandchildren, and that's what she's going to care about most. So this was one area in which a daughter-in-law would really almost feel betrayed. She would say, well, my mother-in-law says she's a progressive woman, says she gives signals that she wants to be friends with me, and yet it's quite clear that she puts her son and his career first. Now, the daughter-in-law feels betrayed, but of course, the mother-in-law is simply being what she is. She's being a mother first, and mm-hmm. however much she's in any other context, she's rooting for equality of women. When it comes to her own son, she puts him first.
And you, in fact, in the book, you say that it's the mother slash mother-in-law and the daughter slash daughter-in-law who tend to have the greatest problems.
Yes. Now, and that was another surprise because most of those horrible mother-in-law jokes are actually told by male comedians and then they're in the male voice, you know. So the really very disturbing and ugly mother-in-law image comes from those jokes that men tell about mothers-in-law. But in fact, the men, mother-in-law, son-in-law relationship didn't tend to be so fraught. The son-in-law could take a low profile during family visits. He didn't seem so disturbed by family visits or family intrusion in the way that his wife felt as a daughter-in-law. So it was daughter-in-law and mother-in-law, the two women who were often seeing, they felt that their roles, for all the change there's been in women's roles outside the home, still within the home, women tend to be highly invested in how well they do certain roles, whether they're a good mother, whether they're a good wife, whether they're good at keeping the family together, keeping it running, keeping it orderly, keeping it, you know, well behaved. And if mother-in-law and daughter-in-law had different views, those differences could be experienced as competition, and each felt that the other was undermining or criticizing her or trying to push her into the margins of family life. And that was one thing that made that relationship particularly uncomfortable.
So it winds up being a turf battle between two women.
It winds up being a turf battle between two women, but the man actually plays a very important role. And if he doesn't step up to it, then it will seem as though it's just between two women.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, but in fact, these relationships are always triangular. They're always at least between three people. And so the mother-in-law may be competing with a daughter-in-law because she is worried that her relationship with her son is in jeopardy, that it's going to be cut off. And it may be that her son doesn't do enough to say, look, I am now part of a couple. I do love you. I want to continue the relationship with you. But one condition here is that you accept that I really do love this other woman, that I do respect her, that she is the maternal authority in my home now. And I hope we'll continue the relationship, but it will be much easier to continue it if you, mother, also see us as a couple and give my wife the respect that's owed. If he doesn't do that, then his wife will say, whose side are you on? You know, why don't you stand up for me? Why don't you show your mother that I'm an important person in your life? And then in-law problems will become marital problems.
And why is it so difficult for some of the men to do that?
Well, the men have less practice than the women in keeping their parents up to date about who they are and how they've changed. I mean, one of the things I've worked on in the past is parent and adolescent relationships, the relationship between parents and their adolescent children. And I found that there were many more quarrels between teenage girls and their parents than there were between teenage boys and their parents. There might have been the same amount of conflict, but in terms of, you know, arguments, verbal arguments, a lot more between the teenage girls and their parents. And what is going on in those arguments is that often the teenage girls are updating their parents, saying, I'm not the little girl you think you know. I've changed. I want you to recognize my independent way of thinking, my values, my friends. And so by the time they marry, their parents have had more lessons in seeing how they've changed, how they've grown up, that their preferences are going to really shape their lives. And at the same time, they have reassurance that even though they've changed and they have new friendships and new lifestyles, they still have that reassurance that the relationship is going to continue. Whereas the boys, during adolescence, may cause problems, may get shouted at, but they don't argue so much. And when they grow up and calm down, it's easier for them to appear to be mama's little boy, mama's good boy, when he's with her.
Isn't that kind of what he's being when he doesn't stand up for his relationship with his wife?
That is what he is being, and he's not showing his mother that he's not just that, and that in order to keep the relationship on track, both his relationship with his wife and his relationship with his mother, that his mother really does have to update her view of him and where he stands in the world. And he can fail to do that, and that can be infuriating to his wife, who sees him fall into these "I'm a good little boy" pattern in the presence of his mother, her mother-in-law. And another very surprising thing I found was that men were so protective of their mothers, so reluctant to confront them. They really seemed to think that if they confronted them and say, I need you to respect my wife, I need to be able to set these boundaries, that they feared they were being disloyal to their mothers. They were afraid of doing that.
I'm fascinated by that they actually tend to believe that that's what's going to happen. They really are afraid that relationship is going to change or be cut off in some way?
I don't think they're afraid that it's going to be cut off. I think they're really protective of their mothers. They're afraid of hurting her. And many women as wives said, he assumes that I'm stronger than his mother, that I can take the conflict, that I can take what she throws at me, but that she won't be able to change, that he shouldn't confront her. And so when a wife had a problem with her mother-in-law and explained the problem to her husband, women often complained that their husband said, oh, that's nothing, that's just how she is, don't take it so hard, it's not important, or you can take it, or, you know, that's just how she is. So they would say almost anything rather than think about how they could actually influence their mother's behavior.
Okay. And you mentioned adolescent girls tending to speak up and keep their parents updated and to demand a different role and to be seen in a different light by their parents. Doesn't that same tendency then complicate things when they start dealing with a mother-in-law who's a mother figure, but maybe a total stranger to them?
It does complicate things because they're used to having a good, let's say they have a good relationship with their mother. That usually means that they are able to speak up, speak out, express their differences, and have the odd argument without damaging the relationship. This doesn't tend to happen between in-laws. In-laws often are often very careful to be on their good behavior, their best behavior, and they fall into what I call the good behavior syndrome, where everyone is trying to be nice and trying to be polite to the extent that you feel wary of one another. You're walking on eggshells, and that's a very uncomfortable relationship. So some people say, well, you know, I don't argue with my in-laws. I don't have conflict in that sense. But it's an uncomfortable relationship because we can't be open and we can't be direct. We're always afraid that if we do disagree, if we do engage in argument, then it will destroy everything.
We're talking to psychologist Dr. Terry Apter about her new book, What Do You Want From Me? Learning How to Get Along with In-Laws. If you'd like to join the conversation, maybe share your experience with your in-laws, maybe share what has worked for you to maintain good relations with your in-laws, give us a call at 292-8513 or send us an email to openline@wosu.org. Walking on eggshells is something that you can't maintain forever. At some point, doesn't that start to break down? And wouldn't it be easier just to get off the eggshells from the beginning and be honest with each other?
Well, it would. But part of getting to know another person is not only knowing how to have a good, pleasant conversation, it's also knowing how to argue, what you do when you do disagree and disagree with some emotion. And of course, lots of the topics that in-laws disagree about are packed with emotion, where the couple's going to live, how they're going to live their life, how they're going to raise their children. These are highly emotive topics. And different families have very different rules for arguing, for, how much emotion it's safe to express, how you speak to other people, what's acceptable. And it's, you know, everyone I think knows how to have a polite conversation. But when you get into an argument, you need to know a person very well to know how to argue and disagree without it damaging the relationship. So yes, it would be very good if people didn't try to walk on eggshells, but just, you know, were to stride forward directly, honestly, you know, open communication. But when you don't know another person well enough to know what will happen, you know, when you hit disagreement, then people tend to be over careful, and that really, you know, kills communication. And many people complained that conversations with in-laws were just exchanging niceties. There was no real emotion and there was no real communication.
Is this a subject that couples just tend to overlook before they get married or shortly after they get married when they do start dealing with each other's families?
They often, the tension of the process of getting married, you know, the wedding, usually brings the reality of in-laws to light and the reality of in-law problems to light very quickly, as I say, with a great deal of emotion, but it's also a surprise. So I think they get engaged on the whole or think about marrying without considering the impact of in-laws. By the time they marry, most couples are aware that this is a minefield and they don't quite know how it's going to play out. But, you know, they hope for the best. And sometimes, you know, the story is very happy. There were in-laws who said, you know, my parents-in-law bring an enormous amount to me. They're so different from my family. You know, it's as though I have a whole new outlook on life, you know, a whole new set of relatives, and they're just wonderful. There are parents-in-law who said, he's the son or she's the daughter that I never had, you know, and I'm so lucky. And, you know, this woman is the best thing that ever happened to my son. You know, he'd better treat her well. So they're wonderful stories. But on the other hand, they're also very common themes about feeling disappointed, feeling displaced, feeling manipulated, feeling you no longer have control over your life. But the extent of these problems, you know, don't arise day one. They emerge gradually. And it isn't because people are suppressing them or your spouse is hiding something from you. It's because you don't know how these relationships are going to develop. And given our expectations about nuclear families and personal independence, we don't realize how persistent the influences and the bonds are between, you know, our spouse and his parents.
Okay. This is Open Line, and I'm Charlene Brown. We're going to take a short break now, but we'll be back with Dr. Terry Apter and more on learning how to get along with in-laws. And you will be able to join the conversation if you give us a call at 292-8513 or send an email to openline@wosu.org. This is WOSU 820 Columbus.
WOSU News reports on stories from around the state and in your backyard.
Customers who typically use the Scarborough Boulevard BMV agency to get their state-issued IDs will have to go somewhere else after June 26.
This is one of the first times that we've had this specific instance where we terminated a deputy for these reasons.
Get more from your news with the award-winning WOSU News team on WOSU 89.7 FM, NPR News, and classical music.
And good morning. Thanks for joining us for Open Line this morning. Currently 71 degrees in downtown Columbus at 10:30. At 1 o'clock this afternoon, On Point will be here. The economy and markets wobble again. Debate mounts over a stimulus too. But with talk of a fiscal train wreck, can America afford to spend more on stimulus? That discussion at 1 o'clock on Point, right here on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Support for WOSU comes from MORPC's Ride Solutions, a source for carpooling, vanpooling, busing, biking, and walking in Central Ohio. MORPC, find a better way to work. More information at RideSolutions at MORPC.org.
Taking a look at the weather forecast, some clouds this morning and then sunshine this afternoon and a high right around 82. Clear tonight and a low right around 60. Sunshine for Friday and a high near 90. And then a good chance of rain on Saturday. 50% chance of rain and thunderstorms throughout the day on Saturday and a high of 85. And now back to Open Line.
Welcome back to Open Line. We're talking to Dr. Terry Apter, a psychologist who has written a new book called What Do You Want From Me? Learning to Get Along with In-Laws. You can join our conversation by calling 292-8513 or send us an email at openline@wosu.org. We actually have a call, Terry, from Shannon.
Great.
Hi, Shannon. You have a question or a comment on getting along with in-laws?
Yes. The doctor mentioned the son feeling like the mother-in-law's feelings would be hurt by him standing up for his wife. And my comment and question are sort of cultural, because what is it about our culture that we don't have the kind of open communication that will allow us to, say exactly how we feel without hurting other people's feelings? And it seems like, with the mother-in-law having most of the time been in the situation with, been in a relationship or been, the daughter-in-law, how does she become the mother-in-law and still has that type of vulnerability, so her feelings getting hurt because of issues with maternal authority?
Okay.
Well, yeah, that's a wonderful question with actually lots of elements. So here we have a mother-in-law who herself was at one time probably a daughter-in-law. Why doesn't she know better? Why doesn't she realize what a daughter-in-law needs? And, why doesn't she pick up the clues about how to be a good mother-in-law? And the answer is that, it's a difficult answer, but it involves saying even well-meaning people can be very biased when it comes to relationships that matter to them. The mother-in-law, as a mother, wants a close relationship with her son, and is concerned that now that he has a new next of kin, how will that affect it? Now, many women are very careful in becoming a mother-in-law. They hate that negative mother-in-law image. It makes them very uncomfortable, but there's no positive mother-in-law image. So they deal with the negative mother-in-law image. I don't want to be the horrible mother-in-law. I want to be a good mother-in-law, but how do I be a good mother-in-law? They do that by trying to be nice, trying to be polite, falling into the good behavior syndrome. Now, the question, a very interesting question, why in our society is it not possible to speak out directly and say what we feel? I think that actually is a feature of all societies. There are rules of etiquette. There are, there's an understanding that it's not always safe to show how you feel. And what we would like to learn is how we can speak directly and say what we feel, particularly when we really have to, because it's going to affect how our lives. Somehow we have to develop skills for doing that, speaking out without offending other people, being both polite and direct.
Now, and we need a lot more training on that, is what you're saying?
We need a lot more training, but in the case of the in-laws, in-law relationships, we also need help from our spouse. I mean, if we're trying to say to our mother-in-law, this is how I feel, this is what I need, please respect this, if she's not also getting that same signal from her son, then she may not listen to the daughter-in-law. She may think she doesn't have to. So you really need to tell your husband, you know, help him. You are not being disloyal to your mother in saying that your wife needs this or that. This mm-hmm. is not being disloyal. This is being realistic. This is keeping her up to date on what her son, as a married man, as part of a new family, needs. And so that's the thing to work on.
Given that you say most of the time the men, as they're growing up, do not have a lot of practice in speaking up and saying, keeping their parents up to date on how they feel and what they're doing, how do you get the husband to do that when he may have had very little or no practice prior to his marriage, and now you're suddenly in this highly emotional, highly tense situation?
Well, you can explain to him how you feel. And it's much better to, you know, not to say your mother is always criticizing me, your mother is always intruding, she's always annoying, I don't like what she does. Much easier and less threatening to say to him, I feel uncomfortable when this happens, I feel unsupported, and then think of very specific things that he could do. Mm-hmm. You know, please, for example, if your mother says negative things about me, and these are things that I experience as negative, she may not mean it. I know you think she doesn't mean anything by it, but when she starts saying I should lose weight or I should visit a new hairdresser, I feel uncomfortable and I feel criticized. And if you could only say, I like the way you look in front of her, mm-hmm. take my hand, look at me, compliment me, show her that, you know, you like the way I am, that would make me feel much better. So, you know, it's not easy. You've got to do a lot of thinking too. Think specifically what would make you, what would give you support, mm-hmm. and what specific bits of her behavior that you'd like changed, you know, that would make your life much better, and help him with that. And also always reassuring him, I'm not saying your mother is bad. I'm not criticizing her. I'm not asking you to criticize her. I'm asking you to help me, you know, negotiate a relationship. So basically what you have to do is help him do the work that he might not have done beforehand with his parents.
Okay, and it's all part of that getting to know each other process that has to go on.
Yes.
Okay, Shannon, thank you so much for your question. This call is from John. Hi, John, you're on Open Line. You have a question or a comment on in-laws?
Oh, yes, I do. You know, I'm at a point in my marriage that is either going to go south or north because of this mother-in-law wife relationship. And you know, we've been married for 17 years, and that has been a chronic problem that keeps going back and forth, and recently has escalated to a point where, you know, I had been put in the middle between my wife and my mother, and not only just my mother but also my whole family. And the way I see it is, I see that my wife is the one who is on the attack, because, you know, I just see it and I know what I see and what I feel. And it's really not the, you know, the mother that is intervening with the daughter-in-law's problem. It's the daughter-in-law who's always, you know, attacking. But, you know, that's also my wife. And so it has created such a big problem that, and I'm very, very close to my family and my brothers, and but I'm stuck in the middle of, you know, I can't be close to my wife, nor I can be close to my family. And I'm about to lose my marriage because of that, and I don't know what to do.
That's, so, yeah.
And I put the blame on my wife, bottom line. It's
yeah. Okay, well, that's, you know, that kind of tragic dilemma is one familiar pattern in in-law conflict, and it's why that we joke about it. These relationships are deadly serious. You know, you very clearly describe the relationship and the conflict as you see it. But I think in order to make headway, it's important to see whether you can reshape it, reframe it. Your wife is on the attack. If you could approach her and explain, you know, I'm very upset when you attack my mother. I'm very close to her. I respect her. I also want to love both of you. Can you tell me specifically?
I've done that, and that's been, you know, 17 years of doing that. And then, you know, we are at a point of really no return because she's not going to speak to my family anymore, and my family doesn't want to speak to me either. So what this has created is, you know, my, there is no remedy for their relationship, but one thing is I'm trying to, well, maybe I need something different, but I really can't, you know, believe what my wife says, nor do I believe my family. And they're, you know, what I wanted to understand is, have you seen cases where the wife is on the attack, and what is the long-term prognosis when somebody is in a situation like this?
Well, the long-term prognosis could be very good if the people involved are able to stand back and reframe their way of seeing things, because the wife is on the attack because she's very angry, probably because she feels in some way criticized or undermined or excluded. And if instead of focusing on the problem in a way that you would describe as an attack, instead of saying, you know, my mother-in-law is all at fault, she does this, it's awful, it's unforgivable, if she were to say, this is what I need from a family, this is what I can accept from my husband's family, if she could say, I don't want my husband to lose either me or his family, then you can start thinking about solutions. But if people are just very angry and say, what I want is to destroy the other person, what I want is to obliterate the other person and to deny the other person's existence, then that anger is so destructive. And, you know, the only way that you could live with that, I suppose, would be to say, well, I'll have parallel relationships. I'll have a relationship with my family, and I will exclude my wife from it. And I'll have a relationship with my wife, and I'll exclude my family from it. You know, that's a solution, but it's certainly not ideal. Now, can you solve it just yourself? It sounds as though no. You know, one person will have great difficulty changing these, as you say, 17 years of marriage. A lot of those patterns are ingrained habits, very instinctive. And, you know, you want to be able to step back, maybe have help, some kind of family therapy, and because everyone needs to identify who is doing what. And how other people are perceiving that. So I think, you know, there are many possible solutions, but it does mean that people will have to see how they are being unfair to other people, and that's often very difficult, particularly when you're angry.
John, we thank you for your call and certainly wish you the best in dealing with that. 17 years is a long time to be stuck in the middle. So thank you for sharing your story with us. You mentioned, too, the stereotypes about in-laws and how we wind up being influenced by them. What can we do to counteract those stereotypes and to start our in-law relationships in the right direction?
Well, one thing that helps a great deal is reassuring the in-laws, whether it's of whichever generation, that they are really welcomed into the family, that you appreciate their differences, you appreciate what they'll add to the family, that you think that, you know, they enhance as an outsider coming into the family, they enhance rather than detract from the family. It's much easier to set boundaries if people feel that they're generally accepted. Much easier for someone to accept, well, I can't visit her today, or they don't want my help or my interference in this decision, but I know I'm still a part of that family. A lot of the very bad behavior about that you associate with in-laws, being intrusive, being very insistent about family visits, giving advice, coming into the home and rearranging the furniture or taking over the kitchen, that kind of thing often stems from anxiety that I'm not going to continue to be a member of this family, that I have to prove that I'm still a member, that I have to reassure myself that I'm still important to this couple. If they get that reassurance, you know, by being specifically invited to specific occasions, keep being kept up to date regularly with family news, being praised, being told that you appreciate them. If they have that reassurance, then they're much less likely to engage in the bad behavior, which often stems from anxiety about exclusion.
Okay, say for example, you are the daughter-in-law and you have thought about all of these things and made up your mind that, yes, I want to have a good relationship with my mother-in-law, but you're dealing with a mother-in-law who is particularly insecure. Maybe this is her only son, her only child. What do you do if she continues the behaviors that you're talking about, where she drops in too often or she rearranges your furniture or criticizes your cooking or whatever?
It's not easy. You may have to try many different things because, of course, you can stand back and say, I can say, I'm delighted to see you on Wednesday, but please don't come today. You know, it's really not convenient. Or, you know, it's interesting what you did with the furniture, but I really like it my way. And, you know, with the taking over the kitchen, you can say, well, if you come here, yes, of course, go ahead. You cook the entire meal. Or, you know, you can invite her to teach you how to cook for one thing, but say, you know, tonight we're going to do it my way and tell me what you think, and I'll be very interested in that. You can try all sorts of ways, both tactful and firm, for saying, this is what I accept and this is what I don't accept. You will need your husband to back you up, because if an anxious mother-in-law gets mixed messages, she will listen to the messages that she likes rather than the messages that she doesn't like. So,
okay, and that brings up the importance of working as a team.
Working as a team is extremely important. And, you know, you could hear from John how torn it's possible to feel if you know, you feel you can't work as a team because your wife is simply negative, simply on the attack of your family. And, you know, that does make you feel very disloyal.
We're talking to Dr. Terry Apter about her new book, What Do You Want From Me? Learning to Get Along with In-Laws. If you have a question or a comment about in-law relationships, give us a call at 292-8513 or send an email to openline@wosu.org. We have a call now from Dennis. Hi, Dennis. You're on Open Line. You have a question or a comment for us?
Hi there. I hope this doesn't take the discussion astray from I just tuned in, but there's an element operating in the relationship between the in-laws on one side of the family, my daughter's family, on the other side, and myself and wife being the other side. And it has to do with fundamentalist religious beliefs. Now, I love these other in-laws. They're wonderful people. We have no conflict, but we also have no serious discussions. And the same thing is true because my daughter has also converted to that faith. There's no real serious discussion of anything of importance between anyone in the Baptist community and my more, I would say, more rational, I pride myself in it, I guess, what I would call rational approach. And so the turf that is being fought over is influence over my grandchildren, who are brilliant. And I think they sense something's amiss. You know, they avoid the question, why doesn't Grandpa go to church with us? Why does only Grandma go at Christmas time? We're almost excluded from Christmas, and we are excluded from Easter, pretty much. And it's a difficult area to operate on, because I want to preserve peace in the family, and I want to advance the family as much as possible in every possible way. But I also want to, and I do it sort of clandestinely in a roundabout sort of way, introduce reason into my grandchildren's lives. So have I asked you a question that is too far away from your...
Not at all. It's spot on. it's a great addition to the discussion. Yes, religious differences, deep religious differences, deep cultural differences, crucial to in-law problems. When you think about how in some societies marriages are arranged, it is specifically to avoid that kind of conflict, avoid having your daughter marry or your son marry into a family that has a different set of values, a different set of beliefs, or a very different lifestyle. Why? Not only affects your child's life, but your grandchildren. You know, you've also touched on something we've been talking about before, and that was why people behave only with niceties, why they're afraid of arguing. And you said your discussions are without substance. I would say you're engaging, you're using the good behavior syndrome. You know the differences are vast. You know, the differences are hedged with very deep emotion, and therefore if they were to come out, the arguments would be so terrible that it might destroy the relationship. What can you do? You've indicated that you're already looking at a range of strategies. I think that one thing that could help is for you to say, for you to come out from undercover. You can say to your, it's your daughter and your son-in-law. Is that right? It's the daughter. I think it's your own daughter. And
sure.
That, you know that they are bringing up their children to what they believe. But grandparents are an important part of their life, and you want to contribute to them as well, and you'll respect what their parents teach them, but you're also going to, teach them from the heart. You're going to speak to them from your grandchildren from the heart, tell them how you see things, introduce them to your way of thinking about things, analyzing things, things you care about, and it would be devastating to them and to you if they were to deny that really close relationship between you and your grandchildren. These are very difficult differences, which it sounds as though you're negotiating them very well. It also sounds as though it's painful to do so, but it's worthwhile because you maintain a relationship with them and with your grandchildren.
Dennis, thank you so much for your call and for adding such an important dimension to the conversation. We have an email now from Sherry. Sherry says, I wanted to share that I have been extremely blessed. My mother-in-law was a saint. She passed away after my second child was born about 10 years ago, and I miss her. Sherry says she was a very intelligent, wise, warm, and patient woman. I still think about her and how much she added to my life with her actions and words, and she added to my life with how she raised her son. Not all mothers-in-law are like the stereotype. So a really positive email from Sherry.
It's important, very good to have that in front of us. What I found when I was looking at in-laws was that the problems actually arise from a real benefits of family and how important family remain throughout our lives. And it's tragic that there are conflicts because when things go well, they can offer such an addition to our lives. And that's a good example of how in-laws, when in-law relationships go well, it's a huge extension of important family bonds.
We also have one from Ronaldo, and he says, I'm listening to the show about getting along with in-laws, and it occurs to me the most important thing in these relationships is the clear definition of boundaries. Ronaldo says, I have been married successfully for 26 years to a wonderful woman and whose parents are respectful of our relationship. The person who consistently crossed the line was my mother. It was imperative that I insist on being recognized as a grown man with a wife who comes before anyone. This doesn't mean I love my mother any less, only that the role of a mother is not the role of a wife and vice versa. So clearly, Ronaldo has had already taken to heart the things that you advise, Terry, when you're dealing with in-laws. Set the boundaries. Get it straight right from the beginning. And
the message comes from him to his mother.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how the real problems are addressed. That's excellent. Yes.
And Sherry and Ronaldo, we thank you both for your emails. You mentioned also that in-law relationships are fodder for jokes and sitcoms and movies, and it's always negative. How did that get to be? And again, I'll ask, what do we do to counteract that?
I think we have to stand back and think about how much families add to our lives. And there's a great deal that's been said about the decline of the family. But if you look at the parent-child, grandchild bond, that is as strong as it ever was. It remains important to us throughout our lives. Grandparents help with grandchildren, middle-aged children help care for elderly parents. It's, a crucial network of human attachment. And if we look at how important that is, then that also involves seeing how important the connection to in-laws is. It's not only an interference. It's not only a downside. It's a great plus in family life.
And I would think you kind of have to remember that this is real life. This is not the sitcom or the movie.
That's right. And that means that there will be mixed feelings and difficult situations and imperfect characters who are playing in your real life. But the benefits of dealing with the problems, the benefits of looking at things from another person's perspective and of appreciating what they can offer are really the things you have to do rather than just marking out the faults and seeing the conflicts as fixed.
Terry, that sounds like a reminder that you got to think about the fact that you are not perfect either.
Yes, yes. And one of the most difficult things about dealing with in-law relationships is that you have to stand back and you have to say, what role am I playing in these difficulties? Am I being fair to my mother-in-law? Am I being showing her sufficient warmth? Am I taking offense too quickly? Am I being too critical? Those are difficult questions to ask ourselves, but we have to ask those questions if we're going to get on with our in-laws.
This is Open Line, and we've been talking to psychologist Dr. Terry Apter about her new book, What Do You Want From Me? Learning to Get Along with In-Laws. Terry, we thank you so much for being with us on Open Line. Hopefully our listeners have been helped by your presence. I'm Charlene Brown. Open Line will continue in just a few minutes. This is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus, streaming on the web at wosu.org. WOSU 820 NPR News.